Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Thursday afternoon as the Blue Angels are about to fly over our fine city here in Nashville. So if you have the ability to go outside on this beautiful day, go check it out. In the next 15-minute window, they're going to be hitting a lot of spots here in the Middle Tennessee area. Guy that we've always enjoyed talking to over the years, Paul Finebaum, is on the line with us with SEC Network and ESPN. And, of course, you can hear his radio show on our airwaves every day, 4 hours in the afternoon. Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for doing this as always. I did want to tell you a couple days ago, got to check out your interview. I was listening to you. Nice interview with Sonny Vaccaro. Good job by him, man. He had some stories to tell, didn't he?
Yeah, no, you guys love interviews like this. You ask one question like, how you doing, Sonny? Have you seen the Michael Jordan doc? And 17 minutes later, he finally came up for air.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you were hungry, you probably weren't hungry when the interview was over.
No, I mean,
you could have had a meal.
I was just worried that we'd get a break in, but you know, he's a character. And then, long story short, he really discovered Michael Jordan and signed him to Nike. And then he and Michael had a falling out, so Michael decided, "You're not in the documentary."
Yeah, what do you make of that? You're a guy that has been in this business a long time. Obviously, you have a lot of years logged, you know, in journalism. What do you make of a guy like Ken Burns and others have said, hey, you shouldn't have a documentary and have the host subject, you know, having the control that they do? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, let me see if I can digest this question. You're asking a guy who's employed and under contract to Disney and ESPN what I think of their biggest project and most successful entity. I'm kidding, of course. but yeah, it's the way of the world. I understand if you're going to do a 10-part series on Michael Jordan, you need his cooperation. You can't do it without him. So yeah. When you do that, you give up certain things. But you know, I grew up in journalism. I love journalism, but I also understand the other side of it. This is entertainment. And if the person at home didn't get all the warts, big deal. It's still an entertaining, brilliant piece of film. And you know, Ken Burns is different. I've interviewed Ken, and you know, Ken spends he spends 5 years doing a project, and he does it exquisitely. But this was something that had to be done this way. If I call up Nick Saban and say, "Listen, I'd really like to spend some time with you," which I have done this, by the way, for ESPN, and I'm on a plane with him, which I was once, and he tells me something, and he said, "But you can't put that on the air. What are you supposed to do? You've already worked hard to get the interview, so it's a catch-22. If you had asked me 30 years ago, I'd be blasting ESPN, but now, having worked here for 7 years, I think it's the greatest thing I've ever seen."
Good answer. I guess I should have phrased it more towards you've had to deal with this over your career, and you've had a lot of big interviews, whether it was in radio / television or, like you said, for a story. And we've all had to deal with this if you've been in the business longer than 5 minutes, of there is a particular subject or a person that you're going to get on, and there's something that everybody wants you to ask because there's obviously a big story surrounding that or it's controversial, and they've said, I'll do the interview, but you can't, but I won't talk about that. And everybody has to deal with, you know, do you take the interview anyways or do you say, I'm going to pass?
It's seriously the toughest thing about all of our jobs. And I mean, I have passed on interviews before because at heart I am still that rebel, you know, good journalist of the 80s, you know, which I started on the campus of the University of Tennessee and, you know, really didn't care. But I think today you have to be pragmatic and make good choices. I mean, if somebody tells me, listen, I'm going to give you, I mean, I'll talk about everything other than the fact I murdered my wife, I'm going to say, screw you. But, you know, I may cover up something. I mean, in the sense of, yeah, you can look past a minor thing. And in this case with Sonny Vaccaro, I don't even know what the issue was, don't care. But it's always a dilemma. I mean, I've done stories, guys, I not to bore you with my history, but I learned something about a coach once. He was having a relationship with a secretary, and I called him initially because I said, listen, this story's going around. He said, I can't talk to you about it, and I hung up. And he hung up. I'm like, going, I was trying to work through it, okay? At that point, I had no other choice. I ended up writing the story. He got fired. And it took that particular program years to recover, and quite frankly, they still haven't. But you just have to make those choices. And I wasn't going to look past it. I was trying to get his side of the story first, but too many people in our world try to shut down folks like us for asking difficult questions.
Paul Feinbaum on the line with us. We had Herm Edwards on the other day, and, you know, that was met with a lot of people questioning, a lot of eyebrows being raised whenever Arizona State hired him. He's been in television and ESPN for the last decade. Everybody had enjoyed his work, but it's like, really? And then North Carolina brings back Mac Brown, and you know, there wasn't a whole lot of fanfare with that. Mac had been out of the game for a while. But look what these guys are doing in a short amount of time, Paul. I mean, Mac Brown right now has North Carolina football, top three in recruiting. Herm Edwards has, you know, got Arizona State going the right direction. They won a bowl game last year, had the big win over Oregon on national television. What do you make of how those two guys have come back and had some success early on?
I think Herm's a little more surprising, and I was one of those who, like, said, I cannot believe this. But yeah, he's a great person, and I think that works. Young people listen to him. Mac Brown was always a really good coach. He made a couple of mistakes at Texas. It's a long story, but in a nutshell, he gambled. I think the guy's name was Gary Gilbert as a quarterback. He was a number one player in the country. As a result of him, he ended up losing Johnny Manziel and Luck and Jameis Winston, RG3. And all these players came in succession, and because he had signed this one guy, they all said, no, I'm not going there. And it cost him his career at Texas. He was a guy who won a championship, nearly won another one. And what he's doing at North Carolina, he's taking a I'm going to do it my way mentality. And players love it. And I used to work with Mac every Sunday morning at ESPN, and just the coolest guy you've ever seen. He didn't really have to have this job, but he will get North Carolina easily to an ACC championship game in a couple of years, probably pretty soon.
Talking to Paul Feinbaum here on the show, and Paul, we've had in the category of silver lining. I think just because of where everybody sits right now, the pace is so slow. We have had some great ability to have interviews and have some subjects open up. They're not pressed for time. They're in maybe a little bit of a reflective mindset. And we've really enjoyed some conversations. I'm sure you've had sort of the same experience here. Who are some of your favorite interviews that you've had in these last couple of months?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought. I mean, we have gone a little bit out of sports sometimes with some authors, but we had a guy I don't think I'd ever interviewed him until a couple weeks ago, but we had Bob Costas on, and we primarily talked about his old TV show where it was more of a general show late at night. It was late night, And, you know, he was talking about interviewing former presidents and people like that. And it was – and Jack Nicholson. It was just unbelievable. And I have learned, because so many of these people are available – I'll tell you a quick story. I had Chris Fowler on a couple weeks ago, who hosts the Saturday Night Football and the former game day host, College Game Day. And, you know, we had done, like, two segments with him, and I felt like we had really pushed him to the limit. And finally – we were hitting like the 6:30 break, and I said, "Well, Chris, I mean, you guys do this all the time." I said, "I know you're busy." So he said, "Paul, I don't have anything to do. I can stay the rest of the show." I mean, and like, and you're not really prepared for that because, I mean, yeah, most people aren't that busy right now. So, as tragic as this is, and I'll leave the political ideology up and down the dial. It has been an opportunity for talk show hosts like ours to talk to various people. One of my favorite interviews was, I think, the second week with a very proud Vanderbilt graduate, Willie Geist. I knew Mill. I came to Nashville last summer to spend some time. We did a documentary on him for SEC Network. But, I mean, he was just so much fun. And every time he's on, all he wants to do is talk about Vanderbilt baseball and Vanderbilt basketball. So, I was trying to talk about, like, covering the pandemic, and he's bringing up Tim Corbin and you know, the national championship last year. But, you know, we've had a number of country star, music stars who I love to talk to because they're all football fans or baseball or basketball fans. So, yeah, you're right. It has been as bad as it has been, and it has certainly been something none of us have ever seen. It's been an opportunity.
I think, Paul, when Vanderbilt won the national championship in baseball this year, we just threw a shot in the dark. We were going to do the show. We did the show from over at the Hawk as the team was coming in from Omaha, and we just threw a net out to Willie Geist just to see if he would come on, and I think he answered us back with a yes, and I think 60 seconds or less. That's how much.
No, he's – yeah. He is – I mean, we went into Memorial Gymnasium. It was last June. And he told – I mean, we had a film crew, obviously, and he said, you know, I was a walk-on, and then they ended up using me on the scout team. And I said, Willie, there's no way. And he hit – I would say he hit four or five three-pointers out of about 10, 15 shots. I mean, he really is a great athlete.
Well, we had some fun with him, too. Yeah, we're talking to Paul Feinbaum. And so, Paul, another question for you as a host, you know, from host to host. How you're going about trying to filter, process all of the information we get with the uncertainty. For example, when a few schools come out maybe last week and say, we plan on having students come in the fall, and what does that mean for college football? And what if X amount of schools can play and Y amount of schools can't play? How are you going about trying to put this together for your show to try to get the best sense of it you can?
We start with information. We try to get people in newsmakers. Greg Sankey comes on every week, the SEC commissioner. We have, you know, we've reached out and have had almost every athletic director and every head football coach. We talk to other college commissioners, other athletic directors from around the country, television personalities. What I want is starting with information, neutral information, not political gobbledygook. And then, like we talked about a minute ago, some personalities and some entertainment. And you know, our show, as you guys know, is very caller driven. So we do that. But the one thing I was told by an old friend of mine the first week, don't let politics ruin this show. It's too important. And I mean, everyone talks about, I mean, this, you hear it on the news. So this is the certainly the most important story since World War II. That is true. This is in the parlance of college football, which is where we are right now in the calendar, looking ahead, this is the biggest story in college football history. What I mean by that is we don't know what's going to happen. There are so many variables, and I am determined, and I know you guys are as well, to give solid information, not to play political gotcha games. And it's hard not to, because I've lived every day of my life in the South. Although last year, after I think spending 62 days in the fall in New York City, I began to question that. But you have to give information as best you can. I had an epidemiologist on last night, one of the renowned people in the country, and he was giving some pretty harsh reality about the upcoming college football season.
And the next thing you know on Twitter, I mean, he's being viciously attacked. That's fine. I respect everyone's opinion in this, and I don't know what the right answer is. But you have to listen to both sides is all I'm saying. And I think the people that will come out of this okay are those who did not use this as an opportunity to cheapen the product by appealing and by playing to the lowest common denominator to get ratings, to get Twitter followers, or to make brownie points with a certain segment of the population. It's too important.
We're talking to Paul Feinbaum of the SEC Network, ESPN. You can hear his show at 2 o'clock Central Time on ESPN 94.9, our sister station. Paul, one thing that has been an ever-growing debate, I mean, it's been a debate for years. Should there be a commissioner of college football? Should there be a central figure running college athletics or college football, college basketball, what have you? And to me, this situation, albeit unprecedented, one that you couldn't plan for, you couldn't have a playbook even if you tried, shows me that there needs to be more solidarity in college athletics, not just football, but basketball, and have, whether it's a committee or a central figure running things. How do you feel about that? Do you feel the same way or do you feel differently?
I'm totally in agreement. Forget college basketball because it's too complicated with hundreds of schools in the midst of the NCAA tournament. College football needs a commissioner, and it's, we're not talking about the secondary divisions. We're talking about Power Five, the top 50 or 60 schools, and it needs to be someone who can take control. We just don't need to round up the usual suspects like Mark Emmert, who's a former college president. I mean, that's not what we need. We need someone who can be in control and who can play to the interests of those schools. And I think it's long time for the powers in sports to break away from the NCAA because the NCAA is essentially the federal government. There are so many layers of bureaucracy, and I'm not siding on any political front here. But when you're running the federal government, you have to deal with everyone. And I don't mean to come off too elitist here, but in college football, you have to be elitist. Alabama is not the same as, with all due respect, Middle Tennessee. They're different interests, and you have to protect the interests of the Southeastern Conference and the ACC without getting them confused with programs that average a much smaller budget and far fewer people that pay attention to them.
So a fair argument that Darren, my co-host, brought up last week when we were having this debate, the conferences right now, they have their commissioners. The SEC, Greg Sankey, he runs that conference. If there is a central figure, if it's just for the Power Five, are they giving up their power as the head of their conferences to one commissioner of college football, or how do you see that working?
Well, ultimately, you're right. I mean, I'd love to hear the meeting if you got the commissioners of the five Power Fives and see if they could come up with a consensus. Right now, essentially, if you're going to go back to the 50s, 40s and 50s, when the mafia was running parts of the Northeast and other parts of the country, I mean, you had like the Don of the five families of New York, and they sat in a room in the back room of an Italian restaurant. And they decided, who got what? You get gambling, you get prostitution, you get drugs. I mean, I don't know if they could come up with a consensus, but we need that because Mark Emmert doesn't care about college football. It's really not under his domain. And when he came out the other day and said this is what we have to do, I was laughing because Greg Sankey has far more influence. John Swaffer from the ACC, Bob Bowlesby, you just go down the list. So essentially the people that make up college football are those five commissioners and Jack Swarbrick, who's the AD at Notre Dame. They really make all the decisions. They control the college football playoff and Mark Emmert may get his own box at the college football playoff championship game, but he doesn't have anything to do with the process. He controls the eligibility, but not the process of picking a champion.
So you don't think they start on time, or do you?
Right now, I think we're literally right up against the deadline. And I know what everyone says, and you guys have heard it ad nauseum. But I mean, we're getting pretty close. If a decision isn't made in the next 6 weeks, I think it's going to be difficult to start on September 5th. I mean, I think they're technically a game or two, Notre Dame Navy on August 29th. I would say it's less likely that we start on time. I still think the season is in reasonably good shape, but I think the circumstances outside of college football may determine it, just like everything else that's going on. I had the governor of Ohio on the other day, Mike DeWine, who's become very popular because he's a straight shooter. And he said, I asked him, is Ohio State going to play football this fall at the Horseshoe? He said, I don't know. And if anyone tells you they do know, they are making it up. And that, to me, sums up where we are right now with the college football season.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, have you watched any shows, anything outside of sports, Paul? Anything on Netflix?
I must tell you, I'm pretty boring. It's overload, but I really haven't watched a lot because it's I watch television, obviously, but I have not gone Tiger King and binged on all the things that most of America is doing right now.
Okay. All right.
During the football season.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the visit. Continue to be safe. Always good to talk to you, and we'll talk to you down the road.
It was really a pleasure, guys. Be well. Thanks.
All right, you too. That is Paul Finebaum, SEC Network and ESPN, his show today starting at 2 o'clock on ESPN 94.9. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.
Got a special announcement coming up at 12:30 here on Darren, Donick, and Chase that I think you will enjoy. Ryan Porth, director, join us. And then don't forget Elliot Friedman coming up at 1 o'clock. We've got – and this is – I want to make sure I've got my days right. Today is Thursday, correct, Chase?
That is correct.
I got that wrong yesterday. I was off a day yesterday. We've had some excellent interviews today, three to be exact. Tim Corbin, Paul Finebaum, wrapped around John Hines. So really enjoying the show today. And if you have not been tuning in, if you're maybe you're out moving around a little bit more now than you were – a couple of weeks ago, just keep us in mind because we have had some tremendous interviews over these last couple of months, and I hope you'll continue to enjoy our show here. Piece of news here before we get to Ryan, Chase, the Sports Illustrated writer and MLB Network contributor, you see him all the time, Tom Verducci, great baseball reporter, has come out with a really interesting piece of news with the baseball talks. Now, we know that what's going to take center stage a lot over these next couple weeks is the actual labor dispute. They've got to figure out how to divvy up the money. What will the players get paid? And that's going to be somewhat controversial, and to be honest, probably a lot of America, it's going to be a turnoff, right? So hopefully they'll keep some of this behind closed doors. But here's something that I think is noteworthy that Verducci has come up with. One of the hurdles Major League Baseball faces in a return to play, and this would go for any league, is how to provide frequent and comprehensive coronavirus testing without depriving frontline workers and the more vulnerable from needed tests, right? That's a huge thing. No league wants to go out and say, hey, you know, we're going to test all our players and all the workers and do that at the cost of people that absolutely, positively need testing for better reasons than that. So what they've done is they appear to have had a breakthrough here. Major League Baseball believes it has cleared that hurdle by partnering with the Utah lab that runs its performance-enhancing drug program to turn that lab into a coronavirus testing facility. In partnership with MLB, the Utah lab, called the Sports Medicine Research and Testing Lab, not only would provide coronavirus testing for the 3,000 or so baseball players and support staff, but also for thousands more in the general public. Under that plan, MLB would provide a net gain to public testing rather than drawing from existing resources. So that's pretty interesting. The testing plan was presented to the Players Association Tuesday as part of a wider proposal of health protocols, some of which have been borrowed from sports leagues that have already returned, such as the Korean Baseball Organization, the KBO. KBO tests players and staff frequently, including via mouth and nasal swabs, while also using body scan temperature sensing units. So you have this Utah lab combined with some of the practices that the Korean League is using, and maybe you have a roadmap to how you would test players. And so I'm wondering how other leagues are going to see this. And I wonder, let's, for example, Chase, say that the NHL, would they want to call this Utah lab and say, hey, guys, can you do our league too?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, because that goes to what we've been saying of how much are these leagues talking to each other. How much are they, okay, hey, we're doing this. Don't know if you guys want to look at, we're going to call this Utah Labs. We're going to use them. But I would think so. I mean, or if not them, they're going to have something like that in place, because that's what they're going to have to do. All these leagues are going to have to test on a regular basis their players. And, you know, we've had the conversation of, okay, what happens if somebody tests positive? And I don't really think it's an if. I think it's a when. What happens when that happens?
Yeah.
Do you shut the whole league down again, or do you keep going? And some of the sense that we've gotten, at least out of the NBA, we already saw it with the UFC, with a fighter testing positive, that the show went on. They haven't stopped. So I think once they start back, they're going to have that mindset that we're probably going to have some players that end up getting this thing. We're going to have to address that as it happens. So it's a good question, but that's where I think the communication between the leagues is so important.
Yeah, I think initially, when it first started, it's the right thing to do, because it was all just happening, right? And we were all having to learn about what was going on. Now we're 2+ months, past that, education, learning, going through it. And I think if you're coming back, you have to go, in my opinion, you have to go on the premise like it's going to happen, and that person slides out, they go away for 2 weeks, and then hopefully everything's fine, and then they'll be back. But you can't, if you're going into starting something up, whether it's returning or trying to get your season started, in the case of MLS, well, I guess the MLS technically had played a couple of games, Major League Baseball, and the first positive test, you're shutting everything back down. I'm just not sure I don't even know why it's you not, would do all this.
Yeah, there's no way.
There's no point in it. I mean, there's no point to come back. You just well, keep it shut down.
Do you guys think, we've been loosely following the Korean League standings. By the way, your team, the Doosan Club, beat my club, the Lotte Giants, yesterday. So Doosan now 5-3, Lotte 6-2, Chase's Samsung Lions and Marquise's Kia Tigers are both 4-5. But I'm curious, I wonder, because I haven't looked closely enough, they've played 8-9 games per team. Have they had a positive test? You know, they're testing all these players. And so when you step on the field, you feel reasonably like the risk has been lowered. I think that's important just from the mental side, right? I mean, can you imagine like pitching a game if you had no testing? Yeah, you would have to have some sort of anxiety, right? If you slid into second base and there was a takeout slide and a guy fell on top of you, you would have a lot of things in your mind that could come up, right? But you would feel eased if everybody had been tested, right, going into the game. So I do wonder if they've had anything where they've had to go into that protocol of, okay, so-and-so does appear like he's got a fever, or let's see if he does have the virus. I haven't heard any stories about that yet, but I'll be curious in the coming weeks, because they're ahead of everybody else, what will happen if and when that does happen.
I honestly don't know the answer. I don't know if somebody's tested positive.
I think we would have heard it, right? Yeah. If they had an outbreak, we would know about it, right? I don't know. But I'm just curious if one person on a random team for Kia or Doosan or whatever has been held out of a game for some reason. I wonder.
Wasn't it crazy, by the way, going back to the Tim Corbin interview in the first hour, their trip to Japan in 2009, played the four best college programs over there 11 years ago, the four best in the country, and the setup that they had, and they each team was carrying over 100 players? Oh, my goodness. I could not believe that. That is incredible. Like, how do you get 100-plus players to sign up to play for a college baseball team? I mean, what
I
if
don't
you're
know. I was almost thinking he was going to say something the other way. I thought he was going to say then, and they came out with 15 players on each team. I thought he was going to do that and not 100. How do you possibly have a practice with that many guys?
Right, and how do you keep everybody happy when you have 120 baseball players on one team?
You clearly don't.
I don't know how you – yeah.
Unless all four of those schools each have four teams, which is what I guess could. You know, your A team plays our A team. Our B team will play your C team, and then we'll flip-flop. You know, maybe they do something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Gosh, I have a hard enough time wrangling.
You're the seventh string catcher, Darren. Good luck. Have fun.
11 8-year-olds. I couldn't imagine 120 18 to 21-year-olds, right? Oh my God. What? And what's the coaching staff? How many do they have on their staff?
Good grief.
Hey, if they didn't have stations, then something's wrong in those practices. You better have stations. Man. How do you keep everybody occupied? Do we have something to get to right now, or are we in a stall?
We're ready.
Okay.
I think Ryan's standing by.
All right. Let's go to Ryan Porth, the program director here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's got a big announcement that we are excited about to unveil at the end of next week. Ryan, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you guys for having me on to announce this. And we've been working a lot here in the last couple weeks around this project. You know, we've been walking down memory lane a lot on our airwaves, as a lot of people have since sports came to a screeching halt in mid-March. And next Friday, if you're not aware, is the 3-year anniversary of the Predators winning the Western Conference, of winning that Game 6, that memorable Monday night against the Anaheim Ducks, and doing so in dramatic fashion with Colton Sissons scoring the hat trick in Game 6 to move on to their first ever Stanley Cup final in 2017. So what we're going to be doing next Friday, starting at noon, and it's going to be a 2-hour program called Game 6 Remastered. And we have replayed Game 6 between the Predators and Ducks multiple times during this time period, where there hasn't been any live Preds hockey or live sports as a whole. But we have never packaged together Game 6 like we will for this feature. There's going to be exclusive, in-depth interviews with David Poile, Sean Henry, Ryan Johansson, Austin Watson, Colton Sissons, and there's going to be play-by-play from Pete Weber and Brent Peterson weaved into this, and Pete Weber is actually going to narrate this program that airs next Friday from 12 to 2 p.m. It's essentially going to be an oral history of the Nashville Predators clinching the West that night on May 22nd, 2017, against the Ducks, and also highlighting different moments within that memorable playoff run back in 2017. So really excited to unveil this. A lot of the legwork has been done by you guys, Darren, Willie, and Chase. You guys have been doing a really good job with those individuals that I mentioned earlier. There's a lot of untold stories of that playoff run, of that night of Game 6 that you will hear during those 2 hours during Game 6 Remastered. So really looking forward to sharing this feature with Smashville, with everyone who wants to tune in. And I'm telling you, after hearing all these interviews and knowing what this is going to sound like, you're going to want to tune into this. This is going to be something that we've really never done before. It's almost going to be like an on-air documentary of that night. And it's going to be really cool, really special to embark on that project and look back on that night.
So next Friday, noon to 2 p.m., you're going to hear this basically a 2-hour documentary on Game 6 Remastered Western Conference Final, Preds Ducks.
Absolutely.
I can't wait. I love stuff like this. And when we were all brainstorming about this, we were thinking about it, and I still flip around the channels, the MLB Network, the NHL Network, NFL Network, they all have their versions of these types of programs. For MLB, it's the MLB's greatest games, and Bob Costas and Tom Verducci, we just mentioned, they host the show, they get players on, coaches. I love that stuff. And that's kind of the model we used here. So I think it's going to be fantastic storytelling, and it's awesome that you have Pete to narrate the whole thing. Because it's a fascinating game. It's not only a great breakthrough for the team, you know, just winning the first Western Conference title they'd ever won was a huge thing. But when you consider what they were up against in that game and the key players that were out, all of those injuries and the way they did it, it was really a special night from all different angles.
Yeah, it's been fun to be a part of, too, some of the interviews that we've done. And, you know, we won't spill the beans, but some of the conversations I know I've had, you know, I've learned things that I didn't know. It's been a different look, because I remember that night, you know, I was at the end of the game. I was downstairs in the media room, so I wasn't in the bowl. You know, I wasn't living it like a lot of people did. I was waiting to go in hopefully a victorious locker room, and it turned out that that's what it was. But it's been neat, so I think the listeners will enjoy it, and there will be other aspects that you will see throughout social media that lead up to this, so it'll be cool.
Absolutely. And there's going to be a video element, too, that we've been doing this project with. Zoom has been our best friend, everyone's best friend, as you work from home. And we used Zoom for a lot of this project. And there will be a video element that we'll be sharing that afternoon as well. So it's going to be a really cool deal, something that, again, we've never really done before on ESPN 102.5 The Game, but this felt like a great time to walk down memory lane of May 22nd, 2017.
We have a question on our text line, and it's a very good question at 615-737-1025. Are y'all planning on posting Game 6 Remastered on Spotify for people that have to work and will not be able to listen to it? Ryan, your answer is?
In one word, yes.
There you go. Because we post everything on our on-demand section at thegamenashville.com or Spotify or Apple or Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm just glad we've made the announcement. I just couldn't hold it in any longer. I was afraid I was going to slip up and say something. So I'm just glad we finally put it out there officially.
Yeah, I'm proud of you. You haven't done that at all.
Wait a minute. I slipped up yesterday, said something on the air. The minute I said it, I was like, oh. Probably shouldn't have brought that up.
No, you know what my favorite part of that was?
Supposed to be tomorrow, not today.
Is you say it, and then Willie just follows you right off the cliff. It does the same thing.
Oh, just in case he pushed me.
Said
yeah,
it,
he,
I, yeah, I just
he's like, see ya.
Went right on.
Right, I'm standing
I was like,
at the
well,
top
I guess it's
waving.
Okay.
And then Willie gave the effort. He pushed me completely off the cliff. Then he, like, reached out when I was already 20 feet falling, reached his hand out like, oh, I tried to get him. Yeah, no, and I'm like, oh, Willie.
Meanwhile, I'm just standing there watching, waving. See you guys.
Well, I was the one to goof from the get-go, so I shouldn't have been at the end of the, you know, end of the cliff looking over anyway, around loose gravel.
But it's okay. It's officially announced, you know, as they say on Twitter, officially official.
Well, in all seriousness, I haven't obviously heard the final product. But if it's, you know, just knowing what little I do and what little part I've been involved in the interviews, it's going to be fantastic. And I know you guys have probably experienced the same thing with your interviews. I mean, when this is all put together – over a two-hour span, I learned stuff. You know, I absolutely learned stuff in my parts that I thought I knew everything, but obviously there's just certain things you wouldn't know.
Sure.
But yeah, it's I'll tell you what, it's going to be fascinating to listen to next Friday.
Well, this is kind of funny. So I one of the things that I've done with this project is I was putting together the open that you hear, and I decided, you know, I'm going to do that. I did it last night. Like, I'll do that and then go to bed. Well, the problem is I got myself so fired up because I had the highlights, and I'm hearing Pete, you know, scream, sit down if you need. The Predators are going to the Stanley Cup Final, that I couldn't go to sleep. So I was too amped up after doing all of that.
is there any chance we could get a Blue Angels flyover again next Friday at noon, like right before we start this? That would be appropriate.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Oh, that'd be a great flyover to kick off Game 6 Remastered.
Like we wait until the flyover happens and then we begin Remastered?
Let's see what we can do with that.
Let's see if we can put that request in. Hey, we've got a really big deal starting at noon next Friday. It would only be appropriate that you have a flyover to kind of kick the action off. By the way, in all seriousness, because you'll hear this, I think, like I said, without knowing the final product, we all remember 3 years ago and how there was this storyline of who was going to sing the anthem and who was going to be doing the rally towel and who was going to be on the band stage and seventh man, all that stuff. Are we going to play an anthem?
We should.
Yeah.
We absolutely should.
Like we should, right? We should play the – because I know who it is. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that or not, but, I mean, I know who did the anthem for Game 6. Should we play that anthem?
Why wouldn't you be allowed to say it? It's already happened.
No, I'm I'm saying I didn't know if we're trying to save it for next Friday.
I mean, if you want to say it, it's okay to say it. Like, nobody's going to say anything.
By the way, that was tough at times because we did a lot of digging, and sometimes we would find stuff out, and it was tough to hold it in sometimes. Mm. But we did. We did.
Well, one thing that was very evident in a lot of these interviews is just how invested – the players were to everything that was going around.
Yes.
They're zeroed in and they're focused on the games, but they knew what was going on either on the band stage or with the anthem or all the hype around the city. They were well aware of it.
So, Trisha Yearwood to kick it off then next Friday. Blue Angels, let's put a request in. Blue Angels flyover, Trisha Yearwood, anthems, and then we get it going.
Can I meet Garth again? Because that would be cool. Because I got to meet Garth.
Well, you're supposed to be social distancing, so no.
Zoom?
Could you have a mask? Maybe a mask. Do you have a mask?
I do have a mask.
Can we get Game 6 mask?
Sure.
That's a good idea. We're making a lot of requests, Ryan.
We can get Game 6 Remastered masks.
There you go. That could be a promotion we give away. Game 6. Come get your Game 6 Remastered mask.
Now the people are going to be depending on it.
The sales staff just jumped over their desk going, this is a great idea. Let's do this.
Well, in all seriousness, it is a great idea. I'm glad we're doing it. Good job by you, Ryan, putting all this together. You've put you and a lot of people have put in a lot of hard work into this behind the scenes, especially to get this final product. So kudos to you, and I hope everybody's excited as we are to hear it next Friday starting at noon.
Yeah, thanks, Darren. It's kind of in the stage of now we just got to put the puzzle pieces together. And I'll be doing that here in the next handful of days and looking forward to seeing, or I should say hearing, how all of those pieces come together. And again, the interviews that you guys got with these guys were so good, so in-depth. The stories that they told, a lot of them we didn't know before. So this is going to be something that I know Preds fans will want to listen to. And again, kind of like what Willie mentioned, this isn't just interviews. This is also, going back in time step by step through that game and incorporating the play-by-play from Pete Weber and Brent Peterson within that two-hour window. So looking forward to it.
Awesome. Good stuff. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Ryan Porth, Program Director here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. I can't think of a better way to kind of lead into Elliott Freeman at 1 o'clock. We'll come back and wrap up the third hour next. Marquise continuing to bring back some good music from breaks. Unfortunately, some tough news. I don't know if you guys saw this, but today the University of Akron has announced that they are cutting three sports, unfortunately. Mm. Their athletic budget has been stretched thin during this pandemic. And they have announced that they will discontinue men's cross country and golf in the women's tennis program at the end of the academic year. Akron needs to reduce its financial books to the athletic department by approximately 23%, which is $4.4 million. Their AD, Larry Williams, said these decisions are very difficult, but they are important and necessary at this time. This action aligns us with what the MAC, which is the Mid-American Conference, peers in total number of sports and is part of an ongoing efforts to reduce the university to ensure that Akron continues to invest in high-demand, high-quality academic progress. So we told you the MAC was definitely going to be making a lot of changes, and the Zips looks like they have, unfortunately, at the end of the academic year, will discontinue men's cross country and golf and the women's tennis program. So just thought I would pass that along.
I got really a question about that.
Yep.
Let's say you are on the tennis team and they're going to drop the program, but you have a scholarship, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say you get 33%.
Yep.
Are they going to honor for the existing players the scholarship? I would hope that they would at least do that. Because I'll give you my reference of that. When I was in school, they dropped the women's swim team. And I think they've since brought it back, Vanderbilt. But they dropped the swim program, but for the girls who were on scholarship, they kept their scholarships. In a lot of cases, they had full rides. And so that was a very important thing. So I do wonder about that distinction. So if the kids at least want to stay in school and complete their degree, you know, I would think that some of them would want to go somewhere else and go play at another program. But is that option there for them?
Is the scholarship money included into their budget, the athletics budget? There to me, kind of tells us the answer. If the answer is scholarship money is included in their budget, then probably not. If it's not and it's a separate category, then you would hope they do the right thing and they continue to keep them on scholarship. But if you're trying to reduce the money that you're losing and you're trying to get, you know, you've got to make cuts to save yourself 23% and $4.4 million, I guess I don't know how that works in the college
world. Yeah, I mean, you're going to save in travel and obviously you're not going to pay a coaching staff. That's
right.
That's not there. So there's ways that the cost will get cut without cutting into the scholarship money. But I do wonder about that. And, you know, what the tennis coach for Akron and the cross-country coach, what happens to them? You know, if they're under contract, how do they try to make that right?
That's a great question, because that's something that's come up with other things of, okay,
oh,
this is not in a contract. There's no way you planned for this, and you're cutting the program because of a pandemic that no one could plan for. So how do you go about that? Because, I mean, it's a breach of contract. You're cutting the contract,
yeah,
without really a cause. But at the same time, I mean,
you have to have a fair settlement, you would hope, and not just, you know, tossing that into the street. But if you have a contract, that ought to mean something to the coaches.
The only thing, I've read the entire article now just to see if there's anything about that. And the only thing that it says, even kind of relating to what you're talking about, the AD said the timing of Akron's announcement was made to allow student athletes as much time as possible to find new schools if they want to continue their sports. But that still
right. So that's option A, and I think a lot of them will take that option, right? Hey, I'm pretty good. My senior year is next year. I'm not going to have any trouble getting picked up by another team, right? But then there's others that are like, you know what? This was probably going to be my last stop anyway. I love school here. I don't want to go anywhere. I've got my path to graduation set. I'll just have to live with it. That's what I saw all the swimmers do. I don't think any of the swimmers, because they were all, a lot of them were upperclassmen, and it was just affected them their last year, and they just stayed, and they went to school without playing for that year. But their scholarships were honored. If they weren't, then I would imagine some of them would have left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. Like I said, that's the closest thing I could find in that article to say, you know, there's nothing that says, hey, We want them to stay here. We hate that they can't play their sport, but they've got a scholarship. We're honoring that. We'd love them to finish out and get their degree here. Like, there's nothing, you know, there's nothing like that in the article, just other than they're telling them now so they can get out if they want to go find go to new school and play their sport. So
I can tell you who's on the phone calling right now. The parents of all those kids. They got affected, right?
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. And this is the sad reality to what we've been discussing for 2+ months, and it's not the last time we're going to hear this story. I mean, it's just not. And that's what I fear the most. If for some reason there's a setback or what have you, that they just feel like they safely cannot do this because college football does have a unique, or, you know, college sports is a unique dynamic. It's different than the pros. They are student athletes. We've brought up that word many times in this segment. And so if they are back on campuses and they are able to operate, but if they don't, I just hate that, you know, this is unfortunately, we're going to be reading these stories all the time, unfortunately, around the country, right? There's just going to be sports that are going to go away. And a lot of them.
Some football programs will go away. I mean, it's not like the MAC programs, I would think, are swimming in huge profits to start with, right? That's a different financial model than Alabama or Auburn, right?
Yeah, but what happens is even, you know, let's say MTSU goes to bowl, you know, the teams from those conferences do go to bowl games, and then that's where millions of dollars come in, and they get to, everybody in the conference gets to benefit from that. You know, like Florida, when Lane Kiffin took Florida Atlantic to a bowl game, I mean, that goes into the kitty for the conference. When MTSU goes to a bowl game, that goes into the kitty. Western Kentucky goes to bowl games. When Jeff Brom, they're going every year, that goes into the kitty, right? So they do make money from that for sure. And, you know, they've got some television money coming in there. So, I mean, I would think that, you know, could it happen? Sure. I mean, could it end up getting to the point where a football program goes away? Possibly, but that's to me like the last straw. I mean, you're kind of done. You pull the plug on
I mean,
the football
they bring
program.
They bring in the
sports.
Most revenue, but they also by far spend the most.
True.
You know, that's where some schools have made the call over time and said, you know what, we can't make it work. We're just not going to – we're better off without football. Remember, Austin Peay did that and then they changed their mind. UAB did it and then changed their mind, right? There's schools that have gone through this.
But do we think it'll happen, though? Now that I sit here and think about it, I wonder if there's a smaller school that
probably a couple.
It ends up happening.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Are you saying Division One?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if you're talking about smaller, I mean, I couldn't speak to the smaller schools. I mean, a lot of those aren't even some of they're not even at you know they're not even scholarship tied to scholarship. So to the smaller divisions, sure, football programs go absolutely. Division One, I'm not willing to say that. Yet I don't. Like I said, I think if you get rid of Division I football program, you're basically waving the white flag on.
Yeah, you're done.
Athletics at your school. Gone. So
well, but that wasn't the case at UAB when they dropped football. That wasn't. They had a plan for going
forward.
There was
a lot
football.
Of politics involved. Was there not that we talked
huge
about?
Huge amount of politics. Yeah. So, absolutely.
Nate on Twitter just asked us, "Do you think UAB will lose their football team again since Bama is fitting the bill?"
Yeah, I don't think so.
No,
they'll be all right. But there was a lot of politics behind that move. It was the wrong thing. They got crushed for it, deservedly so, and I'm glad that they're back. We'll come back. Elliot Freeman will bring us back to start the final hour of the program. That's next.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.